Thanks for being here. Where are you in the world and what's it like there?
I'm in Dallas, Texas. Right now it's sunny for the first time in like feels like 2 weeks.
Thanks for being here. And Kyle, who are you? Where are you in the world? What's it like there?
Yeah, I'm Kyle Tutt, co-founder and CEO of Pinata. I am based in the Web3 capital of the world of Omaha, Nebraska, and it's
Nice.
currently I can see snowflakes right now, so I'm a little disappointed.
I love it. Tell us a little bit about just like Pinata. What are you guys building?
We started Pinata all the way back in 2018. While NFTs were around, they were a thing. They weren't a big market. The problem we were solving back then is storing data on a blockchain is exponentially expensive. I think at the time for Ethereum, it was like to store 1 gigabyte of data on Ethereum in 2018 was something like $4.5 million. And so what everybody was using is this protocol called IPFS or the Interplanetary File System. The problem back then wasn't very fast, wasn't very stable. So my co-founder Matt and I came up with this idea of, hey, let's just make IPFS as fast and stable as possible. We launched that at a hackathon called ETH Berlin in late 2018, ended up winning that hackathon. At that point, we thought we were going to take over the world. Everything was going to go great, raise a bunch of money, and everybody would use us. Unfortunately, that's not what happened. It was kind of a crypto winter. People were moving out of the space at the time. But then again, NFTs weren't a big use yet. And so people didn't really need to store data off-chain at any amount of, big volumes. And so Matt and I struggled for a couple of years, but kept calling people in the space, going to hackathons, really just trying to find product market fit for the services we offered. And then in 2020, we could start to see that NFTs really started taking off. A lot of the NFT projects and marketplaces started using our API to manage their media. They were using us to do that. And then obviously, 2021, 2022, NFTs exploded, and we were able to track right along with that, and have been able to help hundreds of thousands of projects.
Super cool. So what was the exact date of the ETH Berlin again?
It was like October of 2018 or November of 2018.
Okay, so maybe talk me through a little bit, because that's super early on NFTs. Like, what was that experience like?
My co-founder Matt and I actually went to ETH Waterloo. I think it was November of 2017. At that hackathon is where CryptoKitties launched, which is, depending on who you're asking, really kind of the first example of NFTs. So we were kind of indoctrinated into NFTs from day one. We got to interact with the CryptoKitties NFT when it was on the test network launching at this hackathon. Fast forwarding to 2018 at ETH Berlin, the excitement around crypto and the builders in the space were always amazing, regardless if it was, the market was way up or the market was way down. There's always people at these hackathons that are excited to build and are trying to push the space forward and use this technology in a really interesting way. So from our perspective, yeah, mainstream kind of narratives and rhetoric, crypto was dead, but that's where we kind of found, our friends. That's where we found our early customers. Justin was actually one of our earliest customers before he was hired on at Pinata. And so we felt relatively insulated other than the fact that we weren't making money as a company yet. And that was tough. But outside of that, there's always excitement if you just go to these hackathons and find people that are really passionate about the space, regardless if the market's up or down.
Kyle leaves out that I was an early customer. I was also building in the Web3 space. I think back then we called it just the blockchain space. He didn't tell me that Pinata was just this hackathon project that wasn't making any money, but I relied on Pinata for my IPFS storage for that project. And it worked
Right.
out. I think Kyle, what, I was customer 256.
256. Yeah.
Yeah.
He took down our systems. So he was just like overloading our single IPFS node we had at the time. Matt, our CTO, was like, we have to shut this guy off. He is taking down the whole system. We can't maintain it. And I'm like, let's not shut it off. Let's call him, get on the phone with him and see what he's doing, because he must be doing something interesting. Anytime somebody's like breaking our system, I always want to jump on the phone and see what they're doing to see what we can learn, see if they're doing something innovative. Most of the times they are. And that gives us insights on, what else we should build for our product and feature set.
Cool. Maybe you guys could take a step back a little bit and talk about where were you guys beforehand and what got you so excited about the space, when did you find Bitcoin, all that good stuff?
I got into the space in 2015. I was working for an edtech startup of all things in Dallas. We were building college portfolio media management. At the time, though, we were working with MIT. MIT and the company I was working for had this great idea to issue digital credentials on the Bitcoin blockchain. So in 2015, was working on that project, started an open source project to do that. And then, of course, Ethereum launched in 2015, and we decided to let's extend it to Ethereum. So went down the rabbit hole from an edtech SaaS company to starting my own company, which is the one that broke Pinata. Started another company after that, went through Consensus's Tachyon Accelerator in New York, and then made my way over to Pinata right at the, I guess, height of the COVID lockdown, the pandemic.
How about you, Kyle? What were you working on before Pinata?
I was at my first job out of college. It was actually in motorsports, but it was in technology. We were doing this cool thing where we would actually take down race communications between drivers and engineers. So that communication at a racetrack is open. We would take it down, transcribe it live, and then all of the engineers and crew chiefs or whoever could actually read what the other teams were saying. And so they were basically using it as a way to understand the strategies and the tactics that other teams were going to use and deploy during the race by basically spying on each other.
Were you creating a mass like surveillance like yeah. facility to do like mass cheating in motorsports? Like, what's going on right now?
So, the unique thing in motorsports is that communication is open. And the reason for that is because the fans want to listen. So when you're when you're at the racetrack, all the fans are listening to their favorite driver or whatever the situation is. So we use that kind of loophole or that advantage to be able to listen to what people were saying. The fun part about it was then the teams catch on and then they start doing code words. And then, we have to start like breaking the code words during the race. So they would, swap the code words as much as possible. And yeah, so a lot of fun. But I had first heard about Bitcoin in 2013 and didn't really do anything. And then 2015, I decided to buy some, just kind of getting my feet wet. I'm not really like a trader by any means, but I was really interested in the technology and just where it would go. And then, I learned about Ethereum and smart contracts, and that really kind of got me excited. And I kind of started moving towards like, all right, that's probably where I want to be, and decided to quit my job in April of 2017 and just jumped into the space. I didn't have any plans other than I wanted to build a company on blockchain or using blockchain technologies in some way or another. And then eventually found myself here today talking to you.
I mean, you guys have a pretty big team here too. How many people are on the team?
We're a team of 48 now. I think it was only like 20 last year. And then for a long time, it was just Matt and I, so two. And then Justin was the first employee. We also hired somebody the same week as Justin. And it was four of us. And then it kind of like snowballed and has become a pretty big company. At least from our perspectives, it's been a wild ride and a lot of fun being in the space and being such a important and integral tool in the space has been a lot of fun.
How do you kind of get to the point where you're like, okay, I want to create a solution that is a cheaper, faster, easier way to store off-chain data? And then how the heck did you name it Pinata?
When I quit my job in April of 2017, kind of backing up a little bit, being based in Omaha, there wasn't like, a huge community that I could tap into. So I had to jump on a plane and fly to hackathons, all over the world, actually. As a non-technical co-founder, I knew I needed to understand the technology at a much deeper level. And the best way I thought to do that is lock myself in these rooms with a bunch of other people for 24 hours and just kind of like jam and figure out how to build using the technology. And then through that, I kept coming back to Omaha and I was like, I need friends here. So I started the blockchain meetup group in town. That grew to 500 people. But the first person to reach out to me for that meetup group was Matt, my co-founder and CTO. And then, I was like, hey, you need to come with me to these hackathons. First one was the ETH Waterloo one. And we kept going to the hackathons and then we started consulting. So we were doing smart contract consulting and that kind of stuff. And through the consulting and the hackathons is where we ran into that problem of storing data off chain. And we kept running into it and kept running into it. And we're like, there has to be an easier way. And so Matt was like, why don't we just spin this up and we'll, just make it as easy as possible. And I was like, yeah, this sounds great. It's an infrastructure problem because I was always kind of concerned of like, if we try to build a business on top of blockchain at the time, It was really difficult to like make that work because there was so much work that needed to happen from an infrastructure and tooling perspective. And so I was like all in on, all right, we'll just create a tool that helps people in this space. And as it grows, you know, we'll be able to grow. And so we did that and obviously needed a name. And I was always, you know, kind of aware that naming something based off of the technology wasn't like a great idea. So obviously there's a bunch of companies named with the crypto or blockchain or, you know, something to that effect is in their name. And I always wanted to be more like Apple instead of like IBM, right? International Business Machines is like old and kind of stodgy, whereas Apple has been able to transcend time. And so I was really looking for a name like that. But I did want it to be derived from the technology that we're built on, which is IPFS. And when you store data on IPFS, they don't call it storing, they call it pinning, or you pin data to the IPFS network. And so, you know, we were playing around with words like pinwall or pinwheel, pinball, those types of things, and then ultimately ended up with Pinata. And it's probably been the single greatest decision we've made because people remember it quite a bit, and it always puts a smile on people's faces.
I like it. And then, so Justin, you're heading up product. So from a product standpoint, or I guess how long in did you come on here? And then from that product standpoint, what were some of the challenges that you kind of had to overcome in the beginning?
Yeah. So Pinata, I think was 2 years old because I came out. Yeah, I came on in 2020. It was just Matt and Kyle working on it. I actually came on as a contract engineer. And I'm a terrible engineer, so that tells you a little bit about Kyle's decision-making skills. I came on as a contract engineer in summer of 2020. And then as we did scale up and start hiring, I moved over to where I was much more comfortable, which was the product side of things. I think the biggest challenge that we were faced with initially was we'd done this really, really great job of making the storage part of IPFS solid as a rock, scalable. You know, probably learned some lessons from back when I was running my startup and brought Pinata down, but it was scalable. It was stable. Anybody could come in from the smallest size project to the largest size company and get content onto the IPFS network very easily. But then what, right? Like that was the next part of the problem was what do we do with that content? There's public IPFS gateways. That's how you fetch content. That's how you're able to view the content. That was a terrible experience. Anybody in the space will tell you how bad the experience was with retrieving content, how slow it was. If you wanted to watch a video, it's like going back to the mid 90s and watching a video online. So we knew that we had to solve that problem. And fortunately we did make that, I won't call it a pivot. It was really an extension of the product. Storage was always the table stakes, the thing that we had to do and continue doing well. But the first real big product initiative was creating an experience to consume content from the IPFS network in a way that people from, you know, the traditional web 2.0, the cloud, in a way that they had come to expect. And we did that through dedicated gateways. We launched, I think in May of 2021, maybe earlier, we launched dedicated gateways after a bit of testing internally. And these gateways were IPFS gateways that our customers got to spin up with a click of a button, right? Instead of having to go and deploy a server in the cloud themselves and manage IPFS nodes, we made it so that they could literally click a button in our interface and create a dedicated gateway. And they could even brand it. They could have a custom domain associated with that gateway. Turns out this coincided very nicely with the rise in the NFT market. People cared about brand, people cared about performance. And when we launched that, it was a hit. That was a major turning point for the company. In fact, that was the thing that took us from making no money to finally making money and being able to, you know, raise a seed round, raise a Series A, hire and grow the team and grow the product.
Is that, would you say that's more like, it's kind of like almost like an EC2 instance for IPFS, or is it more like front end deployment, like a Vercel kind of replacement for that?
It's interesting because it's a little bit of an EC2 instance situation, but you have to layer in like Cloudflare CDN rather than, okay, as a engineer going and deploying a Cloudflare or CloudFront CDN and deploying an IPFS node to EC2, we packaged that all up in one unified solution that you just had to click a button for. And it was very powerful for people.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge missing piece. You know, we always talk about in the spaces, you know, the replacing, you know, like a lot of people talk about like decentralized social media, you know, or like what's kind of going on with Twitter. And they're like, you know, this is why we need decentralized social media now. And it's like, well, do you realize like how far away we are from having that, right? And serving to hundreds of millions of concurrent users potentially on one system. Do you guys kind of see chasing that down a little bit? Or are you saying like, hey, maybe there's just, you know, there's so much in the space right now for kind of delivering what people want based on the kind of services that are out there where it's like, this is going to be what you guys do for a long period of time.
Yeah, we, so we definitely came from, you know, we were trying to use the peer-to-peer network of IPFS exclusively and trying to make that work. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, people want their content fast. If it's a split second that they have to wait to view that video, they're going to click off and ultimately... NFTs were like losing customers or, you know, people weren't having a great experience with it. So where we've kind of like grown as a company in the way that we think about things is ultimately what we're seeing is, you know, decentralization has a bunch of different meanings to different people. But what we like to see and what we're seeing is NFTs and, you know, this whole Web3 space is really about building your own business and building your own business models and ensuring that you are in control and have a lot of agency and autonomy and ownership over what you're doing. And so what that looks like for us is instead of having to rely on these, you know, these big platforms, like whether it's YouTube or, you know, pick a social media platform or whatever, what these NFTs showed us and what our customers have shown us is that they just want to be able to like run content at scale, right? They want to serve content to millions of people, but it might just be a group of like one or two, maybe three people that are creating these NFT projects, and they need basically that infra and that scale behind them to go from, you know, nobody's consuming this content to everybody's consuming my NFT content overnight. And so that's really kind of where we've spent a lot of time. And are building a lot of tools to help them succeed in that environment and grow from, you know, a three-person NFT drop to now it's like a major media company or a major brand that they've essentially created.
It's radical. I mean, I'm just trying to kind of put it in a box a little bit in my mind. It's like you're like Shopify, but you're also kind of like Salesforce, but you're also kind of like serving cloud. Like it's like a lot of tooling for these companies to be successful or these DAOs to be successful. It's like you've really... And it sounds like embedded yourself into like the infrastructure of like the, all of these businesses that they probably wouldn't have been successful without you.
Yeah, for sure. And the one other thing I kind of like to think about is YouTube at the end of the day, you know, they, I don't know if they probably don't use AWS, they probably use Google Cloud behind them, but really they're just an AWS S3 bucket. And then like they have a CDN and then they have an account management system that powers, you know, you have an account with YouTube to view the content. And when you kind of look at it that direction, you realize, you know, you just get rid of the account management part of it, of YouTube. And then that's just your wallet and that's your NFT. And you are managing access to content with, you know, whether you own the NFT or not, obviously most commonly referred to as token gating. And you know, once you do that and you kind of change your frame of reference and how you kind of look at the space, it really does open up a lot of opportunities. And we see with our customers just a ton of different use cases of how they're using NFTs and how they're using Piñata in conjunction to manage content and permission content and ultimately obviously monetize content to build whatever business model they want to build.
And I like the Shopify example you gave, Joe, because Shopify made everything incredibly easy. And that's been our focus, especially in this space where you go to any protocol, any project, it is very developer and like experienced developer heavy in the way that the experience goes. We didn't want to be like that. And this comes from Kyle and I got on literally hundreds of phone calls with customers as the NFT market was just starting to heat up. As it heated up, as it got to a fever pitch, and you know, with things becoming mainstream, you have people coming in that are not going to know how to spin up a server. They're not going to know what a content identifier is on IPFS. They're not going to know what a CDN is or why it matters. And so we have always focused on making it as easy as possible. We built a feature called Submarine, which is our private media feature. We had an API for that, but we wanted to make it easy for people to understand. And so we actually built an entire web app on top of that API and the main Pinata API so that people could experience that without writing a line of code. We do all of this while making our APIs open and available to developers, because we know that once a developer is inspired by seeing how easy it is, how good of a solution Pinata can build, they're going to go out and build their own solutions in a similar vein.
From your guys' angle, as you develop these tools to make things easier, what are you really excited about, and where do you hope the space kind of grows into?
Yeah, so going back in time a little bit, back in 2018, I was in the NFT space. I think I created my first NFT back in like January of 2018 or something like that. NFTs back then were just images, right? And nobody was doing video. Nobody was attaching like anything interesting to these NFTs. And so we've seen it grow from simple images all the way to now today, people are attaching full-blown applications to these NFTs. So we'll see, somebody will attach a game, a full game to the NFT, and to get access to the game, you have to own the NFT. We continue to think that trajectory is going to continue to move forward. Applications are going to be attached to NFTs. People are going to use the NFTs to token gate access. You can split access to apps based on maybe owning multiple NFTs. There's all sorts of complexities that you can apply with this. But ultimately, through all of that, what we've seen is, again, people want they want business models that they can control, and they want to be able to monetize, whether it's content, media, applications, whatever they're doing. They want to be able to do that, and they want to do it with NFTs because it gives them all the control, right? You either have the NFT or you don't, and then you either get access or you don't. That's where I get excited with NFTs is, I guess you'd call it utility, but like the type of utility that people are bringing with these NFTs is really exciting. And then you can start layering different things on top of that. We are seeing totally different content types. People split content types. There's all sorts of kind of cool and exciting things. And at the end of the day, to us, we've always just treated NFTs as tools. I wouldn't say we saw the NFT space going the direction it did, where, they were worth a bunch of money, and considered assets. We've always just looked at them as these are tools. They help you permission and access content or apps in a new and innovative way, and what you do with that is exciting. Additionally, like, it doesn't just have to be art. It doesn't just have to be media. In the early days, I saw people that were using them to, basically transact IoT data or data sets. You can transact machine learning algorithms, like anything you can imagine, you can attach to an NFT and then ultimately transact it. And that, to me, just is super exciting.
Can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the customers that you guys have, and what are you seeing that's kind of cool or interesting that you're like, okay, they're taking a spin on it that maybe, like what Ian was saying, potentially grows into maybe this kind of like next phase or iteration of what we're going to see from NFTs?
I think there's, we have so many different customers, and it just in the, I guess you call it the business model that they come at things from. So on the more traditional side of things, we've got OpenSea as a customer, right? That one's exciting from an infrastructure play. We have the gateway support. We have the ability to go and find essentially all of the NFT content on the IPFS network, and we can do that in a stable and scalable way. That's an exciting customer because we were able to help prop them up when they needed help the most. We have a great customer story that we did with OpenSea that's, I believe, on our Pinata blog that everyone should read. So that's an exciting one in the more straightforward, this is NFTs, this is NFT marketplace. Where I think things start to get even more exciting, though, is I'll give you an example of a platform, and I'll give you an example of a more like dev agency style customer. There's a platform that we've talked a lot with, I know they have no trouble with us talking about them, Chain Starters, is exciting because of how they're using Piñata behind the scenes. So I told you, we try to make everything as easy as possible. If you don't know how to code, you can come and use Piñata. That's great. But we make sure that all of our APIs are open, as I mentioned before, and that powers companies like Chain Starters. Chain Starters wraps a bunch of different functionalities up, like analytics, NFT minting, loyalty programs, storefronts, things like that, to help you actually create a business and make money, all powered by Piñata because we made those APIs open. So that's a really exciting customer to us. And then on the more, I guess you can consider it wider distribution side of things, we have customers like Gig Labs. They are a developer agency right now, I believe, exclusively building for the Flow blockchain, but they leverage us for a variety of things, including some of our private media features. I mentioned Submarine before. I think that's where the excitement for me really is public media is attached to NFTs. It's available to everybody. But what if you can combine the beauty of public NFTs, the transferability of NFTs, the sales mechanisms of NFTs in a way that unlocks something else that is private to you? We recently, we've got a product manager on our Submarine team that worked really hard to get an unlock mechanism for Flow NFTs. Now, that's exciting because customers like Gig Labs can go in and use that functionality. But it's even more exciting when you think about projects like Doodles that are now spanning Ethereum and Flow with their project. They can do really exciting things like you have to own a Doodle and you have to have you know, one of the accessories that's on the Flow blockchain. Then you can unlock this really unique experience that we've put together. So I think those customers highlight a little bit of the current market as well as the future looking market.
This might be kind of more of an infrastructure kind of question around, like you mentioned, Flow, Ethereum. You know, we can go down the rabbit hole, right? You got Polygon, you've got Avalanche, you've got BNB Chain, you've got Arbitrum, you've got Optimism. Just keep going, right? We got Flow. It seems a lot of people like to build on Flow. We've got
Bitcoin now.
We've got Ordinals on Bitcoin. We'll talk to you guys about some stuff backstage afterwards. That's really interesting too. But like, we're all trying to build down this amazing kind of permissionless direction. But it seems like we are making things more confusing for ourselves. And like the amount of bridge and build, and like you're saying, like, hey, we had to spend extra time building this piece to Flow so that it can work with Ethereum here, versus imagine that just being spent on growth, right? And just being spent somewhere else. It's like, what do you guys just kind of think about that take just in general with like the industry and with NFTs, and how do you think about where you focus your time there?
I always look at it as a positive, long-term. Near-term, it's a UX nightmare, an experience nightmare for a lot of people. But it's actually, I'm a big car guy. So if you go back in time when like the automobile was just becoming a thing, there were hundreds of automobile manufacturers in the United States, right? And now we're down to three. And so I do believe over time there's going to be consolidation. You know, the best way to run a blockchain, or you know, the couple ways to run blockchains, is going to be consolidated, and you know, a lot of that stuff is going to kind of simplify itself out over time, but it is going to take time. What we love at Piñata is we get to work with every chain. So the value that IPFS provides and the value that Piñata provides works for every single blockchain. And so, you know, we'll see like super innovative stuff that's happening on some chain that like nobody's ever heard of. And then we can actually, you know, show like Ethereum people, hey, this is like what we're seeing over here. And so it does give us access and kind of a view into the space that is very horizontal and broad. but yeah, we do think ultimately it needs to be easier. And, you know, we have customers that are working on making it easier. And that's just one of those things, is somebody's going to figure it out. And then, you know, everybody will copy the motion, the UX motion to make it work. And then things will get easier. I think, you know, with some of these bigger brands coming into the space that have like mainstream customers, that pressure is going to continue to push the space forward to make it easier. You know, you can't go to a big brand and be like, yeah, you need to get a wallet. If you lose your keys, you know, you're SOL, like all those types of things are just not acceptable with a lot of the mainstream public. And that does put, I think, healthy pressure on the space to innovate and get better.
So speaking of things that are new and not so easy, I woke up this morning and as always, you're just like drawn to Twitter. And I think the top, like the first five Twitter spaces were all talking about ordinals. And so it just seems like this is, you can't have a NFT conversation without bringing this up now. So I'm curious just to kind of get your guys' hot take, like pros, cons, and like, is this something that's going to blow up? And also kind of curious, like, where do you guys see the value of, you know, essentially copy paste a CryptoPunk from, you know, Ethereum or wherever it's at now onto Bitcoin? Does that have more value? Does that have less value? Like, what are you guys kind of seeing? What are your thoughts? Where does this go?
Yeah. So, you're hinting at a deep, a deep topic that I've been parading around about since 2020. So back in, I think it was June of 2020, I wrote a blog called Who is Responsible for NFT Data? Because at the time there was this narrative that data needed to last forever. And the reason that narrative existed is because people were associating foreverness with more value, right? And that's not true, right? I can, you know, go outside, pick up a rock. That rock's going to last for a really, really, really long time, but it's not worth anything. And so you have to be very careful on like how you're kind of navigating, I guess, the narratives and the rhetoric in the space and ensure that you're not, I guess, falling susceptible to it. And so what we've seen is ultimately there are kind of two classifications of NFTs. Well, it's on a spectrum, but on one end there's assets. And then on the other end, there's consumables. And a consumable is something like a cup of coffee, right? You know, you go buy your cup of coffee. Once I bought it for $5, once I drink it, it's worth $0. But it had utility and it had value. I got caffeine out of it. I got enjoyment out of it, but it went to zero. It has a lifespan. Assets, on the other hand, are things like property, obviously real estate, but they're also things like businesses. So things like the coffee shop itself, right? That coffee shop generates revenue. And that revenue is what, you know, makes it valuable, more valuable or less valuable over time. And so what we push people to be cognizant of is just because it's on one blockchain or another doesn't necessarily give it value. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's an asset and you should treat it like an asset. A lot of these things should be treated as consumables and you should assume that they're going to zero. That doesn't mean, you know, they're not valuable. Again, using another example, you know, I can buy, you know, tennis shoes, obviously, and over time, they're going to go to zero. And so I always want people to be aware of that and thinking critically. And then it's about, you know, do they have business models that are sustainable and that are going to drive people to, you know, buy things and I guess, you know, interact with these NFTs over the long term. If they're not interacting with them, there's no way you can perceive these things to be valuable. And that's kind of where my head's always at. So I don't really care if it's on Bitcoin or Ethereum or any of that type of stuff, or if the NFT lasts for a million years or if it lasts for 1 second. There's going to be you know, a big spectrum of what these things can be, and making sure that you understand that is the most important thing to me. So not a direct answer to your question, but just the way that we kind of frame NFTs in our minds at Piñata.
I think there was a really important key point that Kyle made there, is that blockchains don't make an asset or an NFT valuable. The thing that makes it valuable, whether it's a consumable or an asset, are the people, right? And so the thing that I am comfortable with ordinals and Bitcoin NFTs and this copy paste, is exposing the market to different people. I can tell you from building my first startup in the blockchain space, which was very much revolved around Bitcoin. People around Bitcoin are very different than people around Ethereum. Of course, there's overlap, but they have different mentalities. They have different interests. And if people are the things that give something value, I think it's important to expose as many different types of people to these things and see what sticks. So I'm all for it. I'm a product guy, so I love experimentation. So I consider this a massive experiment, and we'll see where it goes.
Almost should both be financial advisors of saying it depends. If the rock has the, you know, that rock has like the Da Vinci Code written on it, like you kind of want that thing to last forever.
The reason I like arrived at this conclusion is like we were always in the early days getting hit with, so IPFS data lasts for as long as you have it on the network, but you need to make sure it's on the network, right? Versus other blockchain or like other networks or blockchain protocols where it might be on there as long as the network exists or whatever. And so we were always getting questions of like, you know, how do we ensure that this data lasts forever? And I was always like, this is a really kind of silly question, because for the most part, nothing needs to last forever. Like, you know, we buy physical cars that are made of steel, rubber, plastics, and those things, the average lifespan of a car is like 12 years or something like that, right? This big physical thing that took a lot of effort to create only lasts for 12 years. So to think that NFTs need to last that long was always kind of silly to me. Now the space has graduated and has moved on from that. Obviously, some NFTs still want to last forever, especially more art ones. But in the early days, you know, I created an NFT in 2018. And everybody was like, oh, if you created NFTs before 2020, they're valuable or they have more value. And like, nobody's bought my NFT. Nobody thinks that thing is valuable. And so just because it was early doesn't make it valuable. Like I wasn't important enough to make that thing valuable. And I don't have a story behind it that makes it valuable. Like nothing of that NFT is actually valuable, but it, you know, it's still there if you want to go have it. And so having that perspective, I think, gave me a little bit more clear view, a more practical view into this space. And I don't approach it as, you know, Twitter narratives.
Well, the fact that you just spoke about it now and people might've heard that might make it a little bit more valuable. So like the point, you're 1% increase of, ooh, it's old, but that's also a psychological narrative, right? Like the reason that someone wants it is because maybe it's old, not because it's actually old, is I think the point you're trying to make, which I think is
yeah,
an intelligent one.
And the other thing is like, people are just declaring that their NFTs were valuable from the start. And like, if you went into the art space, like an artist declaring that this is the most important piece of art that I've ever made and it's going to be valuable, and so you should buy it, is kind of a silly premise too, right? Like art kind of becomes valuable because, you know, collectively people decide it is over time. There's always interesting battles that we have out there around NFTs, and ultimately we love all of the use cases. It's just we've always kind of been on the other side of what if an NFT only lasted for a second, right? Like what are the applications of that? What happens there? How can we use these things as tools and really do innovative things with them and not pigeonhole ourselves into this thing needs to last forever.
That's how you build innovative products, by the way, is don't pigeon yourself and allow yourself to think outside of the mainstream narrative or the crypto Twitter narrative, depending on your definition.
I mean, I have a notification that just came up here from Muneeb, and it just is like a letter. It says, hey, Corey, I know exactly what this Twitter thing's about. It's Corey from Swan Bitcoin and Ordinals and Layer 1s. And it's just this thing. But we're actually hitting on something interesting here, which I think is the kind of the core of like this space in general, like from the start, which is, we're talking about art and then you're talking about an NFT, and that's a one use case, one utility, right? But art has maybe one utility. Maybe it could be traded. Someone collects it. And that's kind of the utility for that thing, right? You could take, you know, an NFT, that NFT that you created, Kyle, from a couple of years ago, and you could say, hey, that's art. I don't know if it is. Or you could say, hey, this now unlocks people, you know, unlocks a golf course that we've all bought together. It's equity in that business. Potentially it's also maybe a key that gets you into a party in Miami. Maybe it gets you like access to a garage that has 100 1971 Chevelles in there with different colors, and you go drive that. And I think it's the same thing with cryptocurrency, where it's not one thing. And I think this is what everyone has such a hard time with. And this is why it's such a paradigm shift in the way that we're going to interact. It's a different way to interact with money, is that it's much more. And NFTs are a huge piece of like the tangibility that people, it's like easier for people to maybe understand how to interact with the way that cryptocurrency works. And so, I don't know, it's just invigorating for me to like think about the last 5 years and to think that, man, people still don't have that piece figured out, which means like the Cambrian explosion that we all know is coming, like still hasn't happened.
Yeah, NFTs are a rules engine when you think about it. If you want to expand beyond the art and the, you know, collectible side of NFTs, you have to think of them as a rules engine. We once wrote a blog post about what is an NFT, and it's layers of things. It's not just one thing. Sure, the token is one thing, but what does that token actually represent? That's a bunch of different layers. And then I wrote a blog post about this concept of app NFTs. You were talking about unlocking equity in things. Exact same concept that I wrote about in this blog post. Imagine being able to own an application. You go and you deploy your application. That's your business, or it's one product for your business, but it's an NFT. All of the activity within that app is publicly verifiable. If you ever want to sell the app or the company, you now have a much easier path to doing so than exist on the market today. I've used those marketplaces to buy and sell small SaaS products. It's still a bad experience. It's still really hard. I can't verify revenue very easily. I have to jump through a million hoops to be able to either buy or sell a SaaS product. If it's an NFT though, all of that data is already there to be verified, and it's two clicks of a button to buy or to sell that thing. So I think there's a lot of use cases that have yet to be unlocked.
And that's where OpenSea is really, if you think about it, the app store. Like if app NFTs are a thing, then OpenSea is a version of an app store. And that's pretty cool. That's exciting to see where it could go and what can happen. The other story I always kind of like to highlight is, I think it was in 2021 at the time, but there's this website called the Bored Ape Gazette, and it was just a blog essentially that was covering stories about bored apes back in the day. One of them was this guy had a bored ape. He ended up burning it. So he just sent it to a null address and it disappeared. And he tried to start creating derivative work based off of the ape, but technically the ape is like in legal limbo because their terms of service said you needed to actually hold it in the wallet to be able to create t-shirts or whatever he was trying to do. And it really started creating interesting questions of like when you start burning NFTs, what does that even mean? Like people haven't defined what that actually means yet. If you're the person that burned it, does that mean you still like technically own it? No, yes, maybe. And so there's just a bunch of unanswered questions out there that everybody is trying to figure out, like what works and what doesn't.
It's a great one. And it's like, how do we set precedent on those things, and who sets precedent on those things? Is it a centralized government in one country that makes up a rule, and another one makes up a rule, another one makes up a rule, and maybe they're not on the forefront of that technology and making those rules? And so it's like, how does the community maybe start to govern itself in some sort of way and set some sort of precedent that it's like, hey, since you guys are back there, we're going to like set these kind of these rules that we're going to kind of all abide by. And then, you know, as long as someone's abiding by all those rules and we're self-governing ourselves, it's like, if you kind of come mess with one of those people, you're going to kind of mess with all of us at the same time. And I feel like that's really that's kind of what's happening. It's the only way forward with some of these DAOs, because there's no, like they're just falling so far behind with how to figure things out. And there's no precedent that, you hope at some point it's just like, hey, go ahead, and you figure it out kind of going forward. But, I know we're kind of going deep down the rabbit hole here on a lot of, go ahead, Justin, if you got something on that, I'd love to hear it.
I was just going to say that's exactly why we have always encouraged people or projects or DAOs to kind of control their destiny. We get the question of, well, what happens if after the sale of this NFT, what happens with the media that's associated to it? Do I continue to store it? We say, well, control your own destiny. You can choose to write in the actual metadata to that NFT what should happen, right? And once people start doing that themselves, it can expand, it can grow into standards that don't have to be defined by a government or a country or whatever. It can be defined by the people that are actually participating in this economy.
It's just super exciting. You know, I think it's fun to be in the space to help kind of make those decisions too. And especially from like how you get build the infrastructure to make things easier, that's going to ultimately kind of push the space to the direction that we all feel we need to be.
One thing I always like to tell people is like with Web 2, you can Google the answer to whatever it is you're trying to do. Like the answer probably already exists. With Web 3, it's fun and like we enjoy it so much because you can't Google the answer. Like you need to think of the answer and like go out and try to make it happen. And that's obviously like freeing and is a lot of fun, and it produces a lot of creativity, and it's why we get to see so much innovation that's happening in the space. And for me, that's ultimately like why I love getting up every morning and coming in to work for Piñata is, you know, coming up with that next idea. Justin and I have, you know, our personal DMs with each other, just like constant iterations of like, what if this happens? What if this happens? What if this happens? And ideating like that is just a ton of fun.
Yeah, I mean, you and me both. That's the main reason why attracted me to crypto is there's no one telling you that that's not how it's done, or, you know, we do it this way. It's you're really limited by your own imagination and creativity, and then building the team to execute. It's a beautiful thing. I love it.
How do people start to kind of interact with you guys? Are you looking for developers? Are you looking for potential business owners that maybe don't have a technical talent that's working with them? Are you looking for both? Like who's kind of the ideal customer right now and persona for you guys?
Our ideal persona is we term it serious creators. So people who spend every day or they earn their income from creating content of some sort. You know, they're not hobbyists, right? Like the space is still pretty difficult and you have to be pretty committed to it. So we're always kind of looking for people that are, you know, very serious about it. And then developers using our APIs, our core user base, and where the majority of our usage comes from. And we're looking for developers that are trying to build new NFT projects, trying to push the boundaries of what NFTs can be, and just kind of playing around with the tools and the technology that we're trying to provide for them, and applying those to whatever NFT use case they can come up with. So serious creators and then developers of any kind.
Amazing. Well, you guys, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you coming on, and it was a great time chatting with you and then everyone else out there. You guys got Twitter handles you want to send people to, or what's the Piñata Twitter handle?
It's just @PiñataCloud. And then I'm at Kyle Tuck.
@polluter of minds for me.
Amazing.